If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. E-listening on Wednesday, we have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the Supreme Self that we are each an embodiment of. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is, what if you realized you exist everywhere? Oh, are you ready to consider that? Let's take a deep breath together and connect with Source. Allow that Source energy to flow from the top of your head all the way through your biosphere and expanding out throughout your consciousness, all of your subtle bodies, everything that you associate with who and what you are. You don't have to even stop expanding. But you are indeed the extent of your awareness, which in highest truth is unlimited. So let's take another deep breath together and connect with Source. Ready? Yes, that goosebump, that heat, those sensations going through the top of your head and body, that's your connection. Some of you may feel a jolt in the body, almost like an electric shock. And some of you that are more used to this integration will maybe feel anything except a sense of presence and a gentle rocking in the body. It's interesting, so many cultures daven, they move back and forth when they're chanting. The Tibetans do that, the Hasidics do that. And I find that I do that whenever I'm teaching or in a transmission beam. The body rocks back and forth. Those are the energies of the divine light and sound as they align with your presentation here in the illusion of time-space. So what if you realized you exist everywhere? You know, that's the quantum physics, the quantum mechanics that is governing a lot of the awareness that is coming in now, is that we indeed are omnipresent right now. So what if you realized you are omnipresent right now, this very moment? What if you realize that you are eternal awareness itself? What if you realized you've always been boundless awareness and present throughout all of existence? You know, all God realized men and women exist in that very state. They simply are omnipresent awareness itself. They have become one with the divine self, the Atman, which is omnipresent. And because we are, as it were, rays of luminosity, of light, sound, and encodements of that one divine self. We are omnipresent, that is, existing everywhere. We are omniscient, all-knowing awareness, and omnipotent, all-powerful, right now. That means that any place that you could imagine, you are present in that place right now. Because all of creation, in a gigantic emission of light and love and sound, exercised every possible scenario at the same time, forward and backward in time, and present time, and beyond time. That means that we only have to move with our intention to where we would like to experience ourselves, find ourselves, know any particular thing that we need to know, if we need to know it, and tap into unlimited power. Of course, you don't tap into unlimited power until you've gone through the necessary purification that earns the right to wield that level of power. So what keeps us confined, and most people's lives revolve around, are consequences that have been set in motion for which they are responsible for balancing or healing or addressing in some way so that there's balance and harmony restored. And so all the problems we encounter in our lives are basically the results of our own actions, which always have to return to source. Everything we emit as an energy has to return to its source. And since we are the source of our thoughts, our words, our deeds, our actions, everything that we have cast forth energetically returns to us. And that's what people call their inner demons. There are no such things as inner demons, by the way. There are only the consequences of unloving energy. You see, this is an entire creation based on love. In fact, this particular solar system in this particular universe is governed by the energies of love, wisdom. So love is the highest wisdom, and the highest wisdom is love. And the greatest power is love. And the greatest awareness is that you are the love of God itself. And that love is omnipresent. And when everything in your life is reduced to that love, or expanded to that love, you discover you're omnipresent. But in the meantime, what's on your plate, in your life, in your face, are your consequences. So there are no attacking outside forces. There are no evil entities out to get you. There's no psychic attacks. There's no conspiracy out there messing with your brain. These are all concepts and imaginations and thought forms that many, many people have used as a delaying device for taking responsibility for their own creations and their consequences. These are delaying tactics of all self, creates and invents to keep the enemy at bay outside, apart from oneself. And eventually you realize there are no enemies. There's just your own chickens coming home to roost. And the roosting place is in your mind. So sit with that a bit. Because embarking upon the path of really awakening to the self that you truly are is taking responsibility, entire responsibility for your life and what you sit in at this moment. And another thing, nothing you are experiencing right now is now. You're sitting in your past creations, maybe from billions and billions and billions of lifetimes ago, right now. And there's been a certain portion that is appropriate for you to, let's say, eat. You know, it's doled out. there's a certain portion for you to fulfill and eat in this particular lifetime. Unless you happen to awaken. Once you awaken and realize you exist everywhere as everything and everyone, there is nothing apart from the self, all of the dream dissolves, and with it, the reincarnation, the karma, all of that, you have transcended it and dissolved it. But you can't imagine that of yourself. I mean, you do and you don't. The interesting thing about this is that God part of you, the God self that you truly are, always has the final move. The final move meaning when you completely awaken from everything and you merge again in the divine. So in the meantime, the work, the practice, the sadhana, is to work with what is on your plate in the most loving way you can. Because you're revisiting the past that's already been completed, you've already been here, done this, completed the whole thing a long time ago, the only option you have right now is how you're going to respond to the present moment. And this is where you have the right to act divinely this time. Maybe you've been through the same scenario a gazillion times, but have yet to greet it with unconditional love. So that's the test. And when you find that your automatic go-to, your automatic expression, your automatic way of being is kind and loving and caring, and you're simply here as a conduit of divine love and grace, you don't come back again. You're done. You're finished. You're graduated. I mean, you can always come back if you want to. But it will be a life totally devoted to service. There won't be any human personality showing up at all. You see, people often come to me, and people like me, and they'll ask, which planet do I come from? And I will often, almost invariably, tell them to look up in the sky and point. And then whirl around and point again, and whirl around and point again. And they get a little confused. It's like, well, where are you not? I mean, you know, where's my home? It's not on a planet. Where is it? You're in it. You're like a turtle. You carry your home with you. Your home is within yourself. The kingdom of God is within. Everything you seek is found within, not without. When you open your eyes and look without, you see what is unreal. You see what is passing, transitory, will die, will leave, will disintegrate. You see the time-bound. You see the past. You see the projection of otherness, all of which is false. So to go for truth and reality, you have to turn your attention inward. Most people don't know how to do that. You do it every time you sit in a restaurant and look in the menu. Every time you pick up a menu, what are you doing? You're imagining in your mind what everything tastes like, right? That's inner work. Every time you anticipate your boyfriend or girlfriend calling, you're going in your mind and experiencing vicariously the last time you were with them. Right? So we do this all the time. You're getting ready to go on a vacation. What do? You imagine yourself lying on the beach, snorkeling, riding horseback, whatever, you know, ziplining. That's inner visualization. That's meditation. That's experiencing inwardly. And it's interesting because unless you're really clear and present, you really don't enjoy the outer experience. If you're carrying your baggage of your mental constructs and projections and worries and all that nonsense. You really don't. That's why sometimes you go on a vacation and you come back more exhausted than if you'd never gone. Because wherever you go, you take your baggage with you. You take your past, you take your expectations, you take your anger, your frustration, whatever. So we're being trained right now to move to a whole different perspective. We're at a point when we are really outgrowing the linear materialistic point of view. We're reimagining and re-imaging ourselves as spiritual awareness itself. And we're exploring our boundless existence. I had an interesting experience this morning. You know, I'm always doing inward exploration, inquiry. That's my fun thing. And I asked myself, well, actually, I looked at my whole life, which helps, you know, if you've lived a few years on this planet, or at least imagined you have. And I looked at the what-ifs in my life. What if I had not married so-and-so? What if I had not said yes and gone, you know, for example, to India? What if I had chosen a different career, a different spiritual path, a different... or maybe no spiritual path. Because the interesting thing is, we have also exercised every single possible scenario and experience at the same time, because everything happened at the same time. So why did I choose that particular experience? And how can I know that it was the right one? Well, I'll tell you, it was such a joy to realize that based on the choices I made, it was absolutely inevitable that I made the best choice because of what happened as a result. Even choices which at the time seemed, well, within the social judgment, you know, and the way people think of things, would not have been the best choice. But based on the experience I had as a result of that choice, it was obviously the one I had to take and make. And as I reviewed my whole life, it was like, my gosh, I would not have done a single thing differently than I have done. Not one single thing. Even the things that I had judged, that had thought, oh, wow, you know, that wasn't a good thing. I shouldn't have done that. No, when I look back at it, it was like, oh, my gosh. I had to do it. And sometimes it's really hard things. The things that make you go against everything that seems like the right thing to do, and you are being guided to do exactly the opposite. Well, that was my situation, but based on results. And I saw I was going through many, many things to complete them, not to stay in them forever. I was recapitulating past things and going, finished, 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 done. I was a checkoff list. Some of you have a bucket list. Well, I had a checkoff, no more coming back here list. And so if you find that your life, and maybe some of you can relate, has been like a kaleidoscope of in and out, in and out, in and out, careers, relationships, people, places, living locations, religious perspectives, you've been doing the checkoff, you're not going to have to come back to your list, perhaps. You're finishing it off. And I believe a lot of you are doing that, like I am, checking it off and checking it twice to make sure that you're finished with that. So we're not in a time where it is necessary to add to your constructs. We are now in a point where we are going to be redefined by the divine. You notice how fast the days are going now? Boom, 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 boom. It's because the vibration, the light frequency on the planet is raising. The vibratory rate is raising. Because there is no time. Time is a perception. Totally within the interpretive area of the brain. It does not go beyond the body. There's no time, no separation, no distance, no space beyond the perception of the human brain. So, you just might want to do a little reverie of your life based on what you experienced and look at the what-ifs of your choices. You might say, well, God, I married this really abusive man. Yeah, I did that too. It was called karma. You know, it was consequences. I think consequences is a better word than karma, really. Consequences were coming back. Consequences that had to be dealt with. I dealt with it as lovingly as I could at the moment. And a lot of times I didn't deal with it very lovingly. Because when you have negative consequences, you always have negativity wrapped in it. And it's very challenging to stay in the loving when you're in ego reactivity. So on my better days and my better self, I handled it lovingly, and my worst days and my lesser self, I didn't. Which is probably par for the course. So what if you realized you exist everywhere? Another thing people often ask, people like me, who was I in my past incarnations? Well, open the phone book, or open the history book, or open any page in history, and read your story. Read the Bible, read your story, read the Quran, read your story. Read the Vedic texts, read your story. Read all the novels and all the books. Watch all the movies. And watch all the parade of characters on the evening news. Those are all your incarnations. Oh, you didn't know that? My two-year-old daughter actually defined the truth of the matter. She was walking around one day and she was saying, "Twinkle, twinkle, little star, what you see is what you are." Oh, my God, she's enlightened. Actually, she is. But just saying, twinkle, twinkle, little star, what you see is what you are. So people sometimes try to define themselves. They'll put some grandiose claim out there, I'm Master So-and-so. And I think, gosh, you're really aiming too low. What? I was Master So-and-so. You're really settling for small peanuts here. They'll look at you real crazy. Yeah, why would you limit yourself to that one personality? But notice, you know, they never say I was the bearer of the royal stool and the king, the latrine of the king. You know, people never say that. I was the executioner and the, you know, where they chopped off the heads. People never say that. They're always king or queen or some great person. It's kind of funny, really. I used to joke when I was in those places where people had asked me, I'd say, well, in the court of King Henry VIII, I used to carry the stool of the king out and dispose of it. Actually, I found out later on that that was one of the most intimate and powerful positions that you could have around the king, because only the most trusted and highly, actually they were high aristocrats, were allowed into the intimate chamber of the king or the queen. So I thought, well, I can't use that one anymore. But just as an example of, you know, just the bizarre. You know, when you define yourself, you're really settling for the ego's estimation. Because whenever you sit in the presence of someone like a great realized master or the Avatar Sai Baba or any one of the great beings, they don't see you like you see you. They see the real you. They see the divine you. Moreover, they see themselves as you. That's something you really got when you were with Satya Sai Baba. He always gave that feeling that he was looking at himself when he looked at any one of us. So that's a good spiritual exercise for you. Next time you look at Trump, if you happen to cringe, as many people do, just tell yourself, that's me. All the faults you see in him, that's me. Or Hillary or whoever, doesn't matter. Whoever you have put in that scapegoat, that whipping boy or whipping girl position, just realize, oh, that's me. The Hitlers and, you know, all of these people. That's me. So what's the difference between a Hitler and a Gandhi? Well, most people have 50% mind, humanness, and 50% divinity. That's a rough estimate. We're kind of half and half. You know, the old image of the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other? That sort of is that half-half. And in the case of Hitler, his ego had dominated 99% of his personality, and there was only 1% spirituality. And in the case of Gandhi, Gandhi was dominated 99% spirituality and 1% ego. You know, there's always that little tiny bit of ego as long as you're down here in a physical body walking around and thinking that you're who you are. You have to have ego to do that. So just saying, you know, there are incarnations where the ego has so dominated the mind and is so projecting separation and hatred and negativity that it literally blocks out. Except for a tiny, tiny little point of spiritual awareness. But we've been there. We've done all of it. You have to. You have to. If you are an embodiment of the one Supreme Atman, then you are the soul that has had all experiences. Everything. So anyway, I wanted to share a little bit more of what I was speaking about last seminar. I told a little bit about my background of how I came into training, you know, with the Ashtar Command. And a lot of you just love that story and wanted me to continue it. So I'll start with an experience I had that really let me know that I was not a body, that I was not limited to a physical body. And I'd shortly met my spiritual teacher at that time, and she was a Cherokee woman in Las Vegas, Ashtar Command commander. She had been sent to find me and train me as one of 10 teachers that the command was training. And anyway, we had been in one of those trade shows, and we had this store called the Station of Cosmic Light, and we had a booth. And she was leaning on this statue that we had of this lion and talking to me. And as soon as she moved away from where she had been leaning for a considerable amount of time, I went and leaned in the same place, touching where she had touched. I like to do that. You know, I did the same thing with Sai Baba when he would finish walking around and giving us darshan. I would put my feet exactly in his footprints where he had walked. Or if he had touched the pole or something, I would put my hand exactly where he had touched the pole. Or, you know, whatever. And in those early days, it, you know, Sai Baba just walked freely around the sandy compound, and it was very easy to do that. If he walked on flower petals, I scooped up the flower petals. I would scoop up bits of the sand where he had walked. And, you know, I have vials of the sand and all of these things that Sai Baba had touched and walked on. And I could always tell his footprints, because his footprints always made my feet burn. Anybody else's, you know, nothing. But if I stepped in his footprints, the soles of my feet burned a little bit. Anyway, back to the lion. So I left the conference, excuse me, where I'd been with my teacher, and I went out and got in my car. But the vibrations that she had released on that statue she was leaning upon raised my vibration so high that when I was driving, all of a sudden I found myself leaving my body. My hands were on the steering wheel. I could see them, my arms. But it was like I withdrew like a sheath from the body. And I was up above the car looking down at the body. And that was the first experience I had of knowing I was not a body, that I was something quite apart from the body. And that really imprinted me strongly. So we can create that kind of an experience for ourselves very often through a sudden shock of some sort. Those of you who have been in an accident or close to an accident know how everything at that moment goes into slow motion. It's like you have complete slow motion to think, to decide what you're going to do. You're very, very conscious, and you move very, very slowly. Although, you know, when it's an accident, in time it's bam, bam. But spiritually, you go into that timeless zone where you have unlimited time. And thank God, because you can really prepare. If you're going to leave the body, you can prepare yourself to remember God and go to God. Go to the light, go to love, you know. And I think that's built into our system so that we can have the time to do that. Anyway, just saying, we are moving now into a place where we're experiencing the illusions of the things around us. So many people are saying, gosh, it's everything seems so surreal. I look at what's going on, it's like, it's just like a dream. It's unreal. I can't wrap my head around it. It just doesn't compute. It doesn't make sense. What you're seeing is the complete transposition of an inner state of reality with the new one that is now transposing it and overlapping it, and pretty soon will transcend it entirely. We are moving into what's called the fifth world, or the fifth incarnation, you might say, of the earth, which is the earth chain has, like you could say, seven worlds attached to it. Seven incarnations, each of which lasts for billions of years. But we've been in the fourth world now, and we're halfway into the fifth. So that's what we mean when we say we're moving from the old earth into the new earth. We're moving into the fifth world, or fifth globe, or fifth incarnation of the earth, which will be entirely new. And everything renewed. And very beautiful. The Native Americans speak about it a great deal because they're major players. All the indigenous peoples are major players when it comes to understanding the earth and the shifts of the earth and being attentive to the earth and cooperating with the earth as she literally goes through the birthing process into a new incarnation. It's a death of the old and a birth of the new earth. So you're seeing at the same time, the death process is everything that we have built upon out of the ego, out of the desire for power and position and all and wealth. You see the outer world that we have today to exploit for personal gain primarily has been the agenda. And we're moving now into the fifth world, which will be based on love and sharing and caring and living as one family of light. And also I thought it was interesting because the Native Americans are told from the very beginning never to adopt the ways of the white man, never to have electricity. We were up on the third mesa in Hoti Villa with some of the indigenous elders there. One of the last surviving Hopi elders was Grandfather Martin, and we went up and spent time with him and his wife. And that day they were trying to put in electricity in Hoti Villa, and they were very, very, you know, upset. Why? Because when the grids shift from one world to the next, everything that is artificial and made by man, the plastics, all of the mixtures that we have, the synthetics, the where two or more things are mixed that are not similar, all of those things vanish. They completely vanish. I was laughing the other day when I was looking at our house. It's like, you know what? Nothing's going to be left of this house because as far as I can tell, everything in this house is either plastic or some sort of, how do you call it, synthetic something. Nothing is made of real, you know, wood and real substance. So we're going to be sitting in no house. Probably naked because most of our clothes are synthetic too. And that's why the indigenous peoples and the Jewish people were told never to adulterate, never to mix two things together. So when you mix two things together that are not natural to each other, they can't pass into the next grid. And so just letting you know, if you go find yourself sitting in no house and naked, he'll know why. And we don't really know how this is going to play out. You know, some say it's going to be in the twinkling of an eye, very, very fast. And other people say it's going to be gradual. I remember what Sai Baba said. He said, we do not proceed through evolution, but through quantum leaps. You know, the missing link, that quantum leap that we took from upright simian to Homo sapien, that leap. In fact, Sai Baba manifested the missing link, a little statue of the missing link, for a visiting anthropologist that came to the ashram. And it's in his museum at Prashanthi Nilayam in South India. And I saw it. It's about 3 inches tall. It looks to me like Rodin's thinker. You know, the statue by the sculptor Rodin, the thinker. It looked like that to me. But he said the original Earthian was an upright bipedal simian type of being, a hairless tree-dwelling ape, to quote him exactly. They lived up in the treetops and never came down to the forest floor because they would be quickly eaten by the prehistoric animals at that time. And so they would eat the leaves and they would drink the dew off of the tree you know, tops, and that's where they lived. They lived in the crotch of the trees up high. And I suppose those were the very, very, very original, millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of years ago, humanoids that then later extraterrestrial races came in and upgraded with DNA to make them more intelligent and to create the human species that today is on the planet, which is primarily a hybrid of many, many extraterrestrial colonizations and the original beings that were here on this planet. So we're kind of a Heinz 57 varieties of many, 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 many different cultures and races that have come and added their tweaking to the human being until you have what we are today, which according to them is pretty worthwhile, pretty spectacular and pretty unique. And unique enough to attract the great Avatar Sai Baba to the planet, and the great Christ, and the great Buddha, among other great beings. But just saying, you know, we're not too shabby if we could attract such great beings to our planet. So humanity always has my vote. You know, whenever I sit on any kind of council, I always speak highly for humanity and the worthwhileness of working with human beings and helping them in this transition, which, of course, now everybody's agreed and is doing that. So some of the what-ifs that happened to me when I was being drawn to my first teacher, I had an experience that really, really shifted me. I was feeling very discontented with what I was doing with my life and where I was. And I was working in a dance company in Las Vegas at the time. And I had my own advertising agency, and I had just shot my first pilot for my one-woman television show, and which I decided not to do. And I was working literally day and night. I was working at producing films and doing commercials, all kinds of commercials on television, everything from modeling poolside fashions to selling cars and refrigerators and so forth. I did that by day, and by night I worked as a dancer. And I knew I wasn't on the planet to do that. I knew I was here to work with humanity and help them spiritually. But there was just, you know, there was nothing going on like that. So anyway, I sat down. And the next thing I knew, 3 hours and 45 minutes had passed, and I came back completely aware of exactly what I was here to do. Exactly everything was just clear as day for me. I went from complete depression and not knowing what to do next to completely being integrated and activated and knowing exactly the mission that I was here to fulfill. And the change was so dramatic that when I walked into the apartment that I was sharing with my mom, she looked at me, took one look, and said, "My God, you got religion." That was her, you know, her way of describing the radiance that was coming out of the body at that point. So anyway, I knew I had to find a source to plug in spiritually. And so I was very, very drawn to Yogananda. The only thing I had was an ad in a Fate magazine about Yogananda. But I wrote to Sri Dayamata and told her, you know, my experience and that I wanted to make a connection with, you know, with a teacher and a path. And so she wrote me back and said that Yogananda had appeared to her in meditation and told her that I was a very advanced soul, and I didn't need any of the preliminary teachings that they offered through self-realization. Usually they put you on a 2-year course of study. He said I didn't need any of that, but I could have Kriya initiation any time that I could get up to Mount Washington and have it. And, of course, I was living in Las Vegas at the time, so that, you know, didn't seem too likely. But anyway, I had just read Autobiography of a Yogi not too long before that and had prayed to Babaji to send me to a guru. And it was right after that that I encountered my first spiritual teacher. And she told me, you know, you're from Venus, you are from the Ashtar Command, you've come we've come to work together. And you and I had a incarnation in Egypt together. And, you know, she said all that in one sentence, and I felt like I was going to pass out. You know, where you get hot and cold, feel like you're going to faint. Anyway, I had to decide what to do, because she said I could only pick one path, and you know, it had to be either that or, you know, study with her. Well, that's one of those what ifs. And there was no doubt in my mind that I was to study with her and to take the training for the Ashtar Command, because I knew that I was from the Ashtar Command. I knew I was from Venus. I knew that I was here on Earth assignment, and I knew I had to be trained by her. And I didn't even know what any of that was at the time. I didn't have a name for any of that at the time. And by the way, I was taken up in the Ashtar Command. That's what I later found out, the 3 hours and 45 minutes of missing time. I was up on the ships, and they were activating me. I found that out, you know, later. Because like I said, I had that inner knowing, but I didn't have the name to define what it was or to know where to look for it. So anyway, I started my training with her and trained with her for 3 years until she passed over to the other side. And then during that time, I had been introduced to a man aboard ship by Ashtar. He was very tall, and I saw his aura and the colors of his aura, but I could never see his face clearly because of the light, but I knew his vibration. And so after my teacher died, within a short time after that, he walked into the store, and I was cleaning our shrine room at the time, and I had my arms full of those 7-day candles to take back and replace with clean ones, new ones. And he walked into the store, and as I was heading back to take the candles, the command spoke inwardly and said, "No, he's the one. Put down the candles and go up and greet him." And as soon as I had walked into his aura, I recognized the vibration. And so we only saw each other that one time, but we recognized each other. We knew we were to be together. And he proposed to me just a few weeks later. He went back to Yucca Valley where he was living. I never saw him, but that one time he proposed to me on the phone. I said yes on the phone, and then I went to Yucca Valley, where he was living at the time, and we got married shortly thereafter, and that's when we started working with George Van Tassel out at the Integratron, and that was before the Integratron was built. We were there during the time the Integratron was, I guess it was standing, but it, you know, it was still being constructed, and we were on his board of directors for his College of Universal Wisdom. So, you see, what ifs, huh? What if I had decided to take the path of Yogananda? I would probably be a nice yoga student. But the thing of it was, I wanted a living teacher like Yogananda had. I didn't want a, you know, someone that had passed out of the body. Now, my first teacher was not a guru, and she didn't claim to be, and she wasn't supposed to be. She trained me to be a teacher. After that, I was sent to Flower Newhouse, who was a Christian mystic. Just before my teacher passed over, she put me into the care of Flower Newhouse. And then very shortly after that, I connected with Satya Sai Baba. And that Sai Baba is my guru, was my guru in my last lifetime, and continues. You know, you don't change gurus. When you find your real guru, you know, that's it forever, at least in my experience and feeling. But, you know, you can't look at Sai Baba really as a guru. He's a divine incarnation. So in that sense, he's everybody's inner self outpictured. That's the best way to think of him, is that's you and your God self. You know, not the physical body, but the essence that he embodies is the divine principle itself. So there's a timing for these things, you know, when you awaken, when you activate, when you meet your teachers, when you are passed from one to the next to the next. And, of course, John Roger had appeared to me when I was 12 years old, which was, you know, way before the time I physically met Sai Baba in this lifetime. But he had been my teacher on Venus, and when I looked up in the night sky and said, whoever brought me here to this planet, you've got to come and take me home. I can't stay here. There's not enough love. I later realized, oh my gosh, he came for me because he was the one that brought me here in that spaceship. That's why he came when I said, whoever brought me here, you've got to come and take me home. And that's what John Roger does. That's his job, is to escort the soul back to its home. And so, you know, when it was time for me to have initiation with John Roger, I said, I can't really do that because I'm a disciple of Sai Baba. And then Sai Baba appeared to me inwardly in a purple light, and he said in a deep voice, I am you, which later I found out means father, and was what the Druids called Father God, Hugh. So he was, the word Baba means father. So he was literally saying, I am, you know, Hugh, I am the father principle of God. So then I told John Roger, and he said, well, you know, I sure don't mind sitting on his lap in your heart. And he doesn't seem to mind, because I told him, I said, you know, if you take me as an initiate, you're going to have to take Baba too, because we come as one. You know, I'm not going to go any place without Sai Baba. And that's when he laughed, and he said, well, I don't mind sitting on his lap. And he doesn't seem to mind, so okay, let's go. But that's how that happens, you know, because sometimes people wonder because, I'm equally, a disciple of Jesus and a devotee of Sai Baba and an initiate of John Roger. But that works just fine in my reality, so it's kind of like looking at different members of your family. You know, you have a father, you have an uncle, you have a brother, and you have slightly different relationships with all of them, but they're family. So I look at, I consider all beings, spiritual beings, as part of my family, all the deities. So I married John Eversole, whose name was Shantar. His Venusian name was Shantar. He was a master. And he gave me many, many years of the wonderful experience of living with a God-realized master who was really, really living love. What a beautiful, beautiful soul. He was quite a bit older than I was, 22 years older than I was, so he passed away, but oh my gosh. We never spoke a single crossword to each other in all those years. There was always peace in our home, and you know, I used to try to do some drama every now and then, but it didn't faze him. He just sort of was always calm and quiet and centered and loving and peaceful. It's so wonderful to live with a person that's entirely centered and peaceful. So then I left Las Vegas, as I said, and went to Yucca Valley. And there all the original people that had founded the Ashtar Command work on the planet in this particular generation lived in Yucca Valley or nearby Yucca Valley. So I got to meet them all. And even the woman that Tuella got her mission from was a channel by the name of White Star. And she would channel Teska Deska from the Ashtar Command. And Tuella got the mission from her. Those of you that are familiar with the Ashtar Command, Tuella was one of the earliest and foremost teachers and promoters of Ashtar and Ashtar Command in this particular century, or last century, I should say. So now, you young people that are coming in, many of you, I do believe, are very advanced initiates, if not masters, in your own right. And you don't need a lot of what I had to go through to prepare for the work I've been doing for all these decades. You're coming in ready to go. And so I don't get those questions from you. Where do I come from? Which planet? Anything about my past lives? No. You're asking for mission orientation. And what I always tell people is that working for the Ashtar Command is no different from working at Walmart. Or any other place. You know why? Because we're here to love and serve. Okay? Whether you call that the Great White Brotherhood, or you call that the Ashtar Command, or you call that the subterranean community of Telos, or whatever you want to put as a label, we are here to import love and light and kindness and goodness and sanity wherever we go. And the most sane thing you can do is meet a person where there's a point of agreement and kindle one accord. You can always find a point of agreement so that you can come in on a loving vibration with that person. And if you can't find a point of agreement, and that's pretty hard not to do, because we're all human beings at one level, at least in our imagination. And so there's a commonality there, the fact that we're living on the planet, we're all in this together, we all, more than anything else, want love. We want love and to be loved. Now, when you fully awaken, you realize you are love. You're not seeking for love anymore. You're just here to be a conduit of love. But while you're still in that stage of awakening, you're usually seeking love without, you know, from, you know, somebody or something from without, rather than the inner love that you simply are. So the important thing is to do what you love to do and share it with people. Doesn't matter what it is, as long as it lights you up and is congruent with what your heart and your whole being is telling you to do and to be involved in. And then you move in that arena, whatever it is, and you see, you know, basically you're just expressing your higher nature, whatever you're doing. But those of us in the Ashtar Command, we're here for one purpose, and that is to love, to open hearts, to broaden minds and understandings. But more than anything else, it's to exemplify the kind of consciousness we come from. We come from worlds and civilizations that haven't been touched by warfare for millions of years. Some of us, like myself, come from the higher regions of Venus most recently, where we're living in a golden age, and people are literally like gods at that level. The seventh globe is where Venus is positioned, so she's in her highest golden age incarnation. And many, many of us have come through Venus, the Venus chain, many of us. Because more than anything else, this planet needs to be led back to the love. Not this planet is love, but the people on this planet need to be led back to their hearts, to their natural goodness, their natural divinity, their natural loving nature. Underneath all of that fear and ugliness and combativeness and fighting and everything. Underneath all of that is simply a request for healing and love. And so we move around in the world with a smile on our face, with a loving composure. I mean, not that we're grinning all the time, but I'm just saying, you know, we have a pleasantness about us and a peacefulness about us. And that gives comfort wherever we go. We leave every place where we've been better than when we were in it, because we import those higher vibrations from the worlds we come from. And that's the mission. And we don't argue about, you know, beliefs and which religion a person is in, or what political party or any of that. We just don't go there. We're ambassadors of peace, and that's where we find our natural stride in this world, is that we're the peace radiators. You know, we have to embody it, otherwise we can't bring it to the planet. But that's what we do. And most of us are guided by the things that we are by nature attracted to do. That's why you don't have to ask what your mission is, because you've probably been doing it. You just didn't realize it was a mission. Like, for example, if you work in retail, you're standing behind a desk at Walmart or wherever. Many times you don't realize that's your mission, or you're a mother or father and you're raising children. That's a mission. Or maybe you're a cook in a restaurant. That's your mission. You're putting your vibration into the food, into the children, into the store, wherever you are. You're emanating and radiating the love, the universal love and universal brotherhood that we in the Ashtar Command represent to this and a myriad of worlds. We are the ambassadors of the kingdom of light and love. And that's the mission. You know, you just connect with that immortal part of you within, that when you touch to it, you feel the peace that's beyond anything you could describe. And you know you're home. And then you can roam the universe, and you're in that home place wherever you are. And the whole world becomes your living room. And everybody becomes your family. And that's the mission. And that's what we represent as the Ashtar Command. So I hope this has been helpful. Know that you're guided unerringly, absolutely unerringly, because that's just the way it's wired. And your real choice here is how you respond to the situations in your life. Beyond that, it's already been predestined, you could say. Everything is predestined, usually, before you incarnate. So you can't miss out, is what I'm trying to say. You can't miss your destiny. You can't miss finding what is meant for you. And what is not meant for you won't find you. And if it finds you, it'll leave you alone after a while. So don't worry about it. Everything that is planned by the divine for you is already yours. And it just enters your life at the perfect moment. So take comfort in that. Be happy above all else. Be happy. Enjoy your life and make the world around you as happy and as peaceful and as full of faith as you can possibly encourage, because that's what people on the planet need right now. So we're God's show and tell. So let's go out chanting one nice long Anai Hu with the intention that all people in all worlds and all beings in all worlds be happy and peaceful and be touched with the divine love that every life form embodies. Okay? Deep breath. God bless you, and God willing, I'll be with you this time next week. Namaste.